Welcome to a Monday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we kick off Player Preview Week, our annual breakdown of each player on the Miami Heat. We'll determine their role on the team this season, what they're trying to accomplish, and determine if they'll play a part in the Heat's long-term plans.
Today, we're going to be looking at Miami's ball handlers. That includes Goran Dragic, Dwayne Wade, and of course, Tyler Johnson. So thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where we break down every news item, rumor, game, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat in the NBA for FanSided. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Rommel, a credentialed NBA writer who has covered the Heat and league at large for SB Nation and FanSided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRommel13.
This is the first day of our Heat Player Preview Series that we'll be running all week, every day. We'll answer five key questions about three different players. We'll talk about a key stat from last season, what their role will be this season, then we'll determine their goal for the season, what we're saying about them this time next year, and then play FTK, filler, trade bait, or keeper. Before we get started, this is sort of a tease of what's to come in our upcoming written Miami Heat season preview that we've been talking about and kind of teasing over the last couple weeks. That will be available to purchase in the next few days. So be on the lookout for more announcements by following us on Twitter at Locked On Heat. We've got our scouting report for every Heat player, awesome columns from friends of the pod, a whole lot more that's going to be in there. We're really excited to show that to you guys. So with that, let's get started with Player Preview Week, and we're going to start at point guard with Goran Dragic. Let's start, David, with a key stat from last season.
Key stat for me was 37% three-point shooting. I think that was indicative of Goran's overall impact. Not a bad shooting year, although a drop-off from the season before where he was at 40%. I think we kind of saw it coming. If I remember correctly from our preview last year, we had kind of taken into consideration what had happened when he had played for the Slovenia team to lead their national championship in the Euro Cup, and we knew that he would probably come into camp a little bit tired. Didn't play much in the preseason, if at all. I think he was held out for most of the preseason as he was recovering. And then he kind of just went into the season, and you know, he never really seemed to quite have any sort of real explosiveness. You could tell that it was a long, competitive season for him, just trying to find a way. Even though he did make the All-Star team, it wasn't indicative of, I think, the best shooting that we've seen from Goran.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because my key stat was 59%, and that's what he shot in the restricted area last year. Mm. It was 61% the year before that, 65% in 2015-16, and 69% in the restricted area in 2014-2015. That stat has been going down every single year for the last 4 years for Goran Dragic. I wonder if it's his legs. I wonder if it's his age. And look, that happens. Players get older. They don't have the same explosiveness, like you said. I don't know how much of that is due to playing so much basketball last summer, mm-hmm. or if it's just his overall age, overall, you know, there's been this narrative that Goran Dragic, because he didn't play that much, he was mostly a backup at the beginning of the year, had less mileage. Mm-hmm. He's still an older guy. He's still a point guard. He's still a smaller point guard. And so those guys don't age well historically, and I do feel like we're seeing it in the stats. Look, if you don't have as much explosiveness finishing at the rim, which he clearly doesn't, and you don't even need to look at the stats. Just watch a game from when the Heat first acquired him, that last year in Phoenix. He's a much different player as far as his overall athleticism and how he's able to get up and finish by the rim. But it also affects your legs when you're shooting threes, right? And maybe that's another reason for that decrease from 40% to 37% last year. I mean, it's all there. Dragic has been an up and down three-point shooter throughout his career, so that could also be part of it. But as far as, you know, that finishing in the restricted area, it's something to look at. He's gotten more crafty with it, you know, the iron shoulder, etc. He's found ways to be effective. And look, he was an all-star last year, and you got to give him credit, but just something to keep your eye out on. What's his role going to be this season?
I see him as basically understanding how to be, a playmaker alongside everybody else in this roster. The thing I kept looking at when I was writing up the preview was, this roster has undergone such turnover since he came onto the team, and it's changed how he approaches every season. You know, there was that first year where he was going to be playing alongside Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. Then, of course, Bosh goes down, and you're kind of trying to figure out your way there with other veterans like Luol Deng, etc. It never quite worked out for him. Then he has that really great year where I think he was the most consistent player two seasons ago, playing alongside his 7-11 partner, Deion Waiters. And that worked really well because both of them had complementary playing styles and that they both like pushing the pace and attacking the basket. And it seemed to work really well. Then last year, they kind of got away from that. So to me, his role is understanding what his role on the team is, to be honest with you, understanding how to complement other guys. He's not a natural playmaker, not as good a playmaker as somebody we'll talk about later on the show, I think. But at the same time, he needs to kind of perfect how he meshes with those guys, particularly the younger players, because there seems to be a little bit of a lack of chemistry there that he's never quite been able to develop.
Yeah, I have written here steady hand. It's just he's not going to come out here and score 30 points a night. It's just not going to be what he does. I'd be surprised if he had a 30-point game this season. Maybe he's one or two.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to be out there. He's going to control the tempo. He's going to be able to push the pace when they need to. One thing he's always been good at, he knows when to push the pace.
Yeah.
He knows when to slow things down. He knows how to get guys involved. He's not a high-usage point guard by any means. His usage rate is below average for most point guards, especially point guards who have been to an all-star game. So he's just – he is in the middle of that machine, kind of this central cog, just sort of distributing the ball, being the kind of just team player that Eric Spoelstra praises him for. So that's why I have steady hand here. Goal for this season. I've got just maintaining that fringe all-star level of play. We've talked about that dip in his production, you know, those signs that he could be that athleticism could be waning. So I think his goal is just try to maintain that fringe all-star type of level. And if you could do that, I think that's as good as he could ask for.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that I heard from him at Media Day was that he was going to be working on his right hand a little bit more. So I'm looking for him to kind of show a little bit more of that savvy that you hinted at earlier. Obviously, the iron shoulder is a big part of his repertoire at the rim, but I think maybe he needs to kind of change it up a little bit. You know, at 32, he's no longer as athletic as he once was, and it's not like he was ever a truly elite athlete from NBA standards. So if he wants to be able to mature gracefully and still find a ways of finishing effectively and efficiently at the rim, he has to do things a little bit differently. So that, to me, watching him expand his repertoire even at this point in his career is what I'm looking for.
So, you know, with that decrease in athleticism, increasing that craftiness and those kind of old man basketball moves,
right,
might be the way to... Okay, I like that.
I'm surprised.
So what do we?
You know, you're around the Warriors a lot. I'm surprised that he hasn't worked with or contacted Steve Nash, and that's not to say that he hasn't, but that seems like somebody who would be prime for kind of working with him. You know, being a former mentor of his with the Phoenix Suns, and maybe seeing if there were other ways there. I know that I guess Nash is committed to the Warriors at this point in some capacity. I'm not sure. Is he an official employee of the Suns?
Of the Warriors, I don't think so.
Yeah,
he's at the practice facility all the time though.
Right. Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know if he's an official person. It's an interesting idea. What are we saying about Goran Dragic in 2019?
This might be out of left field here, but I'm saying I can't believe he actually opted out of his contract. I feel like I don't know that Goran's necessarily looking in to cash in on that one big year. I think he could possibly take a longer-term deal and re-sign in Miami, assuming that he doesn't get traded at some point in the near future. If he stays with Miami this year, I could see him working with a team to opt out and maybe signing a three-year deal that's significantly less money per year to kind of help him close out his career here with the Heat.
I think you're exactly right. I think that's going to happen. I think we're going to look at like a three-year, $40 to $45 million total.
Oof.
I think that's right about where he's going to be.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what's going to end up happening. I do agree with you. I've got here written, and it pains me to say this, should the Heat have sold high on Goran Dragic?
Mm.
You know, again, that he is just an older point guard. This is nothing about Goran Dragic's ability or what I think of him as a player. I think he's Miami's best option by far at point guard right now. Justice Winslow hasn't shown me enough to take over that role. It has nothing to do with that. I just think if you're a forward-looking organization and you look at Goran Dragic and you look at certain teams that might need a point guard, there might be an opportunity here to trade Dragic now, sell high on him, get some assets back, and start to rebuild at that position because I don't want them to go down that road where you're paying even Goran Dragic. If he opts out, you re-sign him to a three-year, $40, $45 million, and now you're paying this guy even $14 million a year. at that age, like 33, 34 season. I don't think it's going to age well. Finally, FTK, filler, trade bait, or keeper. For those of you who don't remember from last year or new from last year, basically, this is just a game. Is this player filler on the roster? Is this player just straight up trade bait? Is that the best, you know, way to utilize that player's talents? Or is this player a keeper? Can't imagine trading that player. So FTK, David, what do you got?
I've got filler. It's tough to say about Goran because I think, you know, obviously all of our listeners know that I feel pretty strongly about him and his addition on the team. I think he's a great player, great person, and I'd like for him to stay with the team. But seeing the way that he's kind of aged, not sure if there's a long-term impact that he can make to this team. I know he fits well with the roster is currently constructed, but when you're talking about potentially blowing it up or acquiring a star like Jimmy Butler, that changes the perception of what Dragic brings to the team. I see him being more of a complementary player, one who doesn't fit quite at the upper echelon of point guards and not bad enough to be, you know, in the lower rung either. So he's just kind of a guy that you can throw in on a potential deal there to acquire a potential superstar.
Oh, well, that's why I have him as trade bait. I think you could trade Dragic as a central part of a deal to the team that needs him and get something valuable in return for a team that really needs a steady hand again at that point guard position and just needs that extra something to help a playoff push. I think that there's a lot of teams, maybe even in the West, that can use a guy like Dragic. So I've got him as trade bait. By the way, I just want to shout myself out. I said last year for what we're saying in 2018 for what we did when we did this last year.
Yeah.
I said, who's going to be better, Goran Dragic or Isaiah Thomas? And right now, I think everybody would say Goran Dragic, and I think that was crazy when I said that, Isaiah Thomas coming off that MVP season. But I was worried about the injuries then, and now for Dragic, I'm worried about the wear and tear now. We'll get to Dwayne Wade next, but first, get all of your NBA previews this week at Locked On NBA, 6 teams a day, all 5 days this week, 30 teams previewed by the local experts of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA. Also, we all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team. With Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events that you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. And to make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive $20 off orders $200 or more to save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off of orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by their 100% buyer guarantee. That's a big deal. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theaters and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app, enter the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off of orders $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Promo code LOCKEDON, one word, LOCKEDON, $20 off of an order of $200 or more. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime. Let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Goran Dragic is done. Let's move on to Dwayne Wade. David, key stat from last season on Dwayne Wade.
You know, I looked at the statistical input or output yesterday from Dwayne Wade last season, and to be honest with you, I kind of just stopped caring because I don't even care about his stats. I don't care about what he does on the floor so much anymore. I know I just want a great season from him, but, you know, obviously the stat that really stood out the most was 28 points. That was that performance in Game 2 in the playoffs versus Philadelphia where he led the team in scoring and helped Miami notch their only win of the postseason. I know it might be somewhat of a cop-out, but that was the kind of moments that I'm hoping for, that I'm glad I got a chance to see one last time in a Miami Heat uniform. And I was just really happy with that performance. And, you know, if we can get moments like that, that's all that really matters to me.
Yeah, that was a cop-out answer.
Thanks.
It's like, now I feel bad for following that answer because yours is like very optimistic and positive and mine's not.
Good. Let's hear it.
9.6.
Okay. Turnovers for 36 minutes.
That was his net rating. That was the Heat's difference in net rating, plus 9.6 when Dwayne Wade was off the court. Oof. We talked a lot about on this show how Dwayne Wade seemed to have reinvigorated the Heat when he got back last season, and I still believe that to be the case. I don't think that the on and off court numbers are all that indicative of how Dwayne Wade impacted Miami last year.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that it's very not indicative. However, that said, it's still the case. The numbers don't lie. the Heat were 9.6 points better when Dwayne Wade was off the court, which leads me to believe that Wade's biggest impact was more of a Udonis Haslam-type impact last year. A guy in that locker room, a lead by example, a spark for that team, just, you know, bringing the culture, you know, back to Miami, all that kind of stuff. That was the bigger impact, that emotional impact. Dwayne Wade needs to find a way to positively impact the Heat when he's on the floor, and that's going to be tough, right? Because this is the hashtag one last dance. You know, it's his farewell tour. He's going to want to make a big impact. He is Dwayne freaking Wade. He is the second best shooting guard in NBA history. There is a lot to have pride in, and it's going to be hard for him to sort of take that complimentary backseat. There's going to be a balancing act. And there's going to be nights where he scores 28 points per game and he's the hero for the night, right?
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to that. But in the macro sense, in a general sense, he needs to figure a way to blend in, maybe not shoot the ball as much or force his own shot as much, and just try to find that balancing act. What's his role on the team going to be?
Well, I think you hinted at it pretty well, to be honest with you. Obviously, on the floor, it's about playmaking. I think for Wade, one of the things that we saw in Cleveland, in Chicago, and of course during his tenure with Miami, is that he's always been able to create plays for others. He just seems to have an innate understanding of spacing and where players are. We saw that kind of, there were some struggles that he was trying to figure out where teammates on the Heat would be in certain locations, but he figured it out because, well, he's Dwayne Wade. So that playmaking role off the bench, I think, is a big one for him to fill. And then, of course, as you also said, the mentor and the mentorship and being the team spokesman. I think he is, alongside Eric Spoelstra, probably the strongest voice in that locker room, maybe in addition to Udonis. So I think we're going to see that take another notch, continue to grow and develop a little bit, and we're going to see him be the loudest voice in that locker room.
Yeah, I've got Elder Statesman running that second unit offense. That's what he's going to be. He's going to be Hassan Whiteside's official pick and roll partner, him and I guess Rodney Magruder apparently. And so that's just the role he's going to play. I think that role he played for the Cleveland Cavaliers last year, you know, really. You know, LeBron James obviously leading that offense in that first unit. Wade comes off the bench, leads the offense in the second unit. I could see that being Wade's actual X's and O's role this season.
Now, you talked about finding a way to mesh a little bit more effectively there. Do you think that's something he can actually do? Because in talking about what his role is, you know, both of us seem to think that it's probably just an extension of what we saw from him last year. Do you think at 37 almost, you know, that he can possibly evolve a little bit more as far as what he brings on the floor?
I don't even think he's going to have to. I think that's going to be Eric Spoelstra forcing it. I think Wade's going to average about 19 minutes a game this year. 19 or 20 minutes a game. And probably won't be in at the end of games a lot. Wow. I mean, he will be occasionally. I just don't know that it'll be all the time. He won't be like a regular cast member of that final lineup.
I don't see how he can, man, to be honest with you. I don't see Spoelstra being able to tell Dwayne, sorry, we don't need you out here.
I don't know. I think Wade is entering with the understanding. Maybe I'm being hopeful, but I think that either way, I don't think he's going to be in the floor as much as last year, and I think that'll solve half the problem right there. What are we on now? Goal for this season?
Yeah, that sounds about
I've got go out with a kaboom. I want a few great performances. I don't need 60 points on 50 shots, Kobe Bryant last game. But I need something to just go out on. That's all. That's all I want from Dwayne Wade this year. Just give me two great games.
Yep.
Give me one great game in December. Give me one great game in like, you know, February, kind of March, April area. I'm good.
I you know, it's funny, you almost echoed exactly what I had written about him earlier today. You know, I just want a smattering of vintage D Wade games, you know, just enough to remind us that he made the right choice in coming back. Like, I don't want to see him come back and struggle and have those kind of shooting nights like he did earlier in the preseason. I don't want to see him go 4 of 20 or 4 of 18 or anything like that. Not just because it'll probably lead to a Heat loss, because even that doesn't necessarily matter this year. It's all about watching Wade go out with dignity. And I think that's important, you know. I think, you know, seeing him reach a level of maturity that I never expected him to reach at media day, you know, seeing him talk about his teammates and his role in the team and how he came back to the team and the decision he made, the process and everything else. I just want him to be really enjoy this moment, because it's something that's so rare where a player gets to define how they leave this bright stage. That almost rarely happens. You know, you look at a guy like Jason Terry, who we talked to last year and said, you know, I want to keep playing. And then now he's out of a job this year. You know, Shaquille O'Neal recently talked about that he never got a chance to go out on his terms because he went from team to team as his career wound down. So I just want, like you said, a few good games to remind us why Dwayne Wade is one of the greatest players in NBA history and the greatest athlete in South Florida history.
He looks like he's in great shape. And look, last Friday, he had that 10-point spurt against the Wizards. That pump fake is still that pump fake. He's so crafty. He's so freaking good. He's just like, I'm excited to watch him this year. What are we saying in 2019? I miss Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, same here.
Okay. Filler trade bait keeper, FTK. He's a keeper. Yeah. Let's just move on.
This isn't applied to Dwayne Wade.
Yeah. Let's move on to Tyler Johnson next. But first, Locked On NBA is here for you every day, not just Tuesdays with us. Every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories, and then stay with Locked On NBA all week long to get daily news and analysis on everything going on in the league. It's available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Last one for the day, David. Tyler Johnson. Bumpy. Let's go. Key stats from last season. What do you got?
39 starts. Way too many. I know that obviously they lost Rodney Magruder at the start of the season. Deion Waiters wasn't far behind, missed most of the last year as he was recovering from ankle surgery, still out, obviously. And then Tyler Johnson stepped up, as is often the case with Heat culture, next man up. And he was there, unfortunately, and 39 starts later. Look, I mean, not a really bad year from Tyler. I just don't think that he is a starting quality guard in the NBA. And let's be honest, he's too undersized. He doesn't do anything particularly well. And so as a starter, that's just not the ideal role for him.
Yeah, forced into that because of the Waiters injury, obviously. My key stat is 2. And that's his decrease in points per game from 2016-17 to 2017-18. And a lot of that has to do with, hey, you don't get to play second units anymore. You have to go against starters. And ultimately, we're talking about 2 points less per game, which is one basket a game. But still, like, this was a guy who increased his points per game average by 2 or 3 every single year. And then last year just fell off. And you kind of, when the Heat, there's a lot of reasons the Heat matched that offer, that Brooklyn Nets offer sheet. Yeah. But one of the reasons was they expected to continue to see progress.
Yep.
And cap spike or not, they wouldn't have paid a guy $19, $20 million a year for somebody that was going to average 13 points per game. That doesn't matter how much the cap is. They weren't going to do that. So they envisioned more from Tyler Johnson, and that's not what happened. So what will his role on the team be this season?
Just to be a backup high-energy guard off the bench. I'm hoping that he'll be able to come off the bench, because I think in that scenario, we've always talked about the ideal role for Tyler is to be a good sixth man. And I think he can do that because, again, he doesn't excel in any one area, but it's not like he does anything badly either. He's a little undersized. He can't control that, but he has good athleticism, obviously. He'll still catch a body every once in a while, catching somebody by surprise as he explodes past them and goes in for a dunk. He does provide solid, if earnest and underwhelming defense at times because he is undersized. And so I just want to see him provide the occasional burst. We saw some nice flashes from him last year. I think he led the team in scoring on a couple of occasions, came up big in the clutch, I think, when Deion was hurt, before we acquired Dwayne Wade, obviously. And you see flashes there. It's just never enough, and there's not enough consistency. That's why he doesn't warrant being the team starter. But as a high-energy guy off the bench, I think that's where he's perfectly suited.
That's exactly what I have. And it would be nice, I think through the preseason we're seeing maybe hints. I know James Johnson is out recovering from that sports hernia surgery, but we're seeing hints that Spoelstra might be willing to start Olynyk and Whiteside in that front court.
Right.
And if that's the case, that means James Johnson's coming off the bench, and maybe we get a return to that Brothers Johnson, basically two-man game in that second unit, which would be nice. My goal for this season for him: become a bigger threat off the ball.
Okay.
you got a guy like Dwayne Wade who's going to lead that second unit offense. You've got Justice Winslow who's obviously going to do that same thing. James Johnson, depending on how he comes in, can also handle the ball. I don't see – Tyler Johnson last year, really the last 2 years, hasn't developed enough as a ball handler to really warrant getting that responsibility. We actually saw last season the Heat, when Wayne Ellington was out, running very similar actions for Tyler Johnson. Obviously not the shooter that Wayne Ellington is. Very few people are. Mm-hmm. But if he can sort of get there, I think he shot 36.7% from three-point range on 4.5 attempts a game last season. Not bad.
Right.
Let's get that up to maybe 38, 39, 40%. Let's get that catch-and-shoot thing going. If he could be a bigger threat off the ball, that would be the best role for him. And then he's probably going to get forced into that role too. So if he can embrace it, that's his goal for the year.
For me, I kind of hinted at it before, but I think the goal for the season is to get better at something. Like, you look at Tyler Johnson's body of work and you say, yeah, it's pretty good. It's not great. And that's the problem, is that he doesn't do anything particularly well that stands out, at least not to me. You know, you look at other six men, Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams, obviously, you know, guys that can really provide a scoring punch off the bench. Tyler's not that guy. But he's not necessarily the open door on defense that those guys are either. So he's solid, and that's great, but I'd still like him to just be able to perfect something, whether it's that three-point shooting that you talked about, or maybe get a little bit better as a ball handler, maybe get a little bit better as a defender. Leave it all, you know, now that Dwayne Wade's there, who's going to be creating plays for others, I think, you know, Tyler has an opportunity to concentrate more on defense or maybe on shooting, as you said. So just improve on something. Because if you look at his per 36 numbers over the first 4 years of his career, they're almost identical. The guy hasn't changed from when he was an undrafted rookie. You know, it's unbelievable that he's still doing the same thing he's done. You know, he got paid, and that's great. But at the same time, you need to kind of do something. I don't want to talk about the contract anymore, although I think it's, you know, worse than Joe Johnson and that we're always going to associate Tyler with that deal. And it was through it's through no fault of his. He got paid. That's fine.
He's a great energy guy. He was a fan favorite before he got the contract. I mean, we're talking about, you look at guys like TJ McConnell, beloved by Philadelphia fans. Fred VanVleet, loved by Toronto fans. Very similar type players. And Fred VanVleet, I'll give him more credit because he's actually a damn good NBA player, and he was in the running for sixth man. Did he win sixth man?
No, he didn't.
He didn't win sixth man. Lou Williams got it.
Yeah.
But Tyler Johnson would be right there in that kind of universe if he just wasn't getting paid what he's getting paid, and that's unfortunate because he deserves, you know, he got paid. Good for him. What are we saying in 2019? One more year. One more year of that contract. That's
exactly what I have written. This is scary. We've been doing this show for way too long. I just talked about it. I don't want to talk about the contract, but damn it if that doesn't overshadow anything and everything he does. Yeah. That lens is impossible to escape. You can't view him through anything else other than that huge deal because no matter what he does well, it's almost never enough. And I know that puts a lot of pressure on him. I think he'll be happier and freer once he's off that deal so that he can just play his game and not have to worry about it. I wonder at times if it's ever held like a psychological barrier or obstruction.
It's had
for him.
To.
Yeah, right? You kind of have to hear that you're not deserving of that money. He was very self-aware about it at media day. He talked about it, and it's like, well, what am I supposed to do, say no? I mean, yeah, he knew the deal was there, he took it, and whether or not we held it against him or not, that's up to us. But I mean, who would say no?
This is the guy who threw up when he got that, before he even signed it, he threw up when he got it offered to him, right?
Right.
And this is like, you know, look, I feel good for him. I'm happy for him. That money's in the bank. I agree with you. That next contract for him will be great. He'll just go in, zero expectations. He's talked about the expectations of that and trying to be that player. He just do what you do, which is a little bit of everything. Nothing great, but nothing too bad. FTK, he's filler because Miami just doesn't have a choice. He's there for the next 2 years.
Yeah. I wrote keeper, because it's impossible to try and move that contract.
All right, well, that wraps up day one of Player Preview Week. Tomorrow, we'll have Dion Waiters, Wayne Ellington, and Rodney Magruder. But for now, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. As always, you can reach us by sending an email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And, of course, make sure to hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or whatever you use to listen. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Thanks for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.